This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and KKFI and MOXA have partnered to bring you these stories.
Okay, thank you for joining us here on Radioactive Magazine. And today we have Ito as your host, and she is going to be talking to two people about how you express emotions and related to emotions in various cultures. So welcome, Ito, and I will let you introduce your guest.
Thank you, Craig. Hi, everyone. This is Ito Otini. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We hope you enjoy our program. Today we are going to have Makaya Walters and Asya as our guests. Asya is a Turkish-American and is a postdoctoral student at the University of Arkansas. Makaya is a fictional writer and is from North Carolina and is graduated from the University of Arkansas. Hey guys, thank you so much for your time today, and we are excited to have you on the show.
Hi.
Hey, thank you so much. So our show today is about managing emotions across cultures. As we said before, Asya is from Turkey originally, and Makaya is from America. So we are going to compare the two cultures in different scenarios. So back in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco, people, for example, when someone dies, people had to take different actions. For example, women would pull out their hair or torn their clothes to show that they are hurting for someone. And also, across languages, people express emotions in different ways. And also, languages are different. For example, in my mother tongue, we don't have a word for guilt. So does that mean that there is no guilt in the Atlas Mountains of Morocco? So I will start with you, Asya, and I was wondering if you can give us an example of, if you compare first linguistically, if there is a word that exists in Turkish or English or vice versa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ito. Thank you for inviting. It's a really interesting topic. Sure. So in Turkey, we have a word, Turkish word, like about like related to guilt. So we have. So it was the first question, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have like some words that we can express that kind of emotions, and for Turkey, I would like to say first that it's an Eastern Mediterranean culture predominantly. And it's not taboo to show your emotions in Turkey. I think it was your first expression, like if you lose someone, how you express your feelings, right?
That is correct, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I would say it really varies. Expression of emotions is varies based on the gender or age or even the different parts of Turkey. But in general, it is expressed loudly and publicly. For example, in some regions, people cry at the top of their lungs, or it's especially on the eastern side, but on the western part, it's usually a silent crying. And some people also beat their breasts, I would say, and some people sing a sad song about that. And you can see some people faint over sadness. So I think these are the emotions that I can remember, think of right now.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Makaya? How do people react when, especially when someone dies in the U.S. or at least on the part of the U.S. where you were raised?
Well, we are not as expressive, generally speaking, and I think that is largely a cultural hangover from Puritanism and Victorianism and the colonialization process that happened in this country that formed the United States, the Puritans were very repressive of their emotions and did not approve of displays of emotion, generally speaking. But I don't think we're just continuing that tradition without any variation. I would say we've shifted from a classically repressive culture to more of a restrictive culture, meaning that we do sometimes sanction displays of intense emotion, but only if they follow certain scripts that are established and acceptable. And in relation to grieving specifically, in mainstream culture, they're generally speaking, funerals are more ceremonial affairs. Wakes are more ceremonial in nature, in that there is a space for expression of emotion, but it's not mandated. And if the expression is too intense or it somehow violates the bounds of that space that's been established, it can be difficult for people around the grieving person to respond properly. And again, properly is just the fact that I've used that word suggests that there's a proper and improper way to express emotion. I have noticed in recent years, Americans have become much better at articulating the grieving processes and emotional processes generally that we're still not very good at putting into practice. We are now able to acknowledge generally as a culture that there are many different ways to grieve. There's not a correct or an incorrect way to grieve, but still we are not very good at responding to people who are grieving in unorthodox ways, and it can be difficult to even allow yourself to grieve in a way that's unorthodox if you feel that it's unacceptable or will bring some kind of shame or social sanction. And it can be difficult too for others who are witnessing that grieving process to respond in a way that's helpful and appropriate, because we've relied very heavily on our cultural scripts, and when we deviate from those scripts, we're generally not very good at freestyling when it comes to intense emotion.
As you just mentioned that people in Turkey would, especially women, beat their breasts. And as I said before, in Morocco, where I came from, people would pull out their hair and tore their clothes and take kind of like really, they would hurt themselves externally so that they can express or show that they are hurting internally. How would you see that scenario in the U.S., in whatever the situation is in like, if people react that way, what do you think people would think or say?
In mainstream, white-shaped American culture, which is not exclusively white now, but it's heavily influenced by white culture, I think people would be very confused and unnerved, alarmed. They wouldn't know how to respond. They might feel a need to, if somebody were expressing their grief that viscerally in bodily, they might feel the need to move that person to a private space so that they don't disturb others. And I think it is different in different subcultures in the U.S., and I can't speak to those because I haven't spent a lot of time navigating it in various subcultures during, like when people are mourning. So I think there are subcultures, racial or religious subcultures, where more bodily expressions of grief are acceptable, but in mainstream American culture, there is room for some intense expression of grief, maybe some bodily articulation of that grief, but wailing and beating one's breast, I think that would be considered excessive, generally speaking, and it might bring some embarrassment to the people around the griever.
Mm-hmm. And this is a question for you, Asya. So mm-hmm. In Turkey, when someone has an issue that is affecting them emotionally, to whom they are going to like talk, or to whom they will be asking, from whom they would be asking help or support?
For the emotional support,
yes,
it's first the family, I would say, but then the friendships are really close. I think in Turkey we have a very close relationship with each other. Really you can go to a friend, and the friendship is also very strong. And so, you know, your friend can give up everything, whatever they do, for you, and then, you know, help you. the friends and their family, I would say first.
So how about you, Makaya, like in the States, if an individual has an issue that is affecting them emotionally, how do they where do they go? Where do they seek the support from?
Well, I think I'm personally a bit of an outlier here because I'm feeling a bit Turkish because I would probably go to my family and my close friends, but I don't think that's the norm. I think generally I've met many, many Americans who have really dysfunctional relationships with their family and don't trust their family to handle, don't trust a relationship to handle that level of emotional intensity and to be able to process it in a healthy way. So especially among younger generations, I think it's a bit all over the place. It's very, very common for people to seek help through their therapists, or if they're not currently in therapy, if they lose somebody, to seek out therapy for the first time. In some subcultures, therapy still has a stigma, and so that, you know, some people might not seek help at all because they feel that grieving is an expression of weakness, and that, again, is a hangover of our Puritan tradition. But especially among younger people, I think there is a lot of room opening up for people to seek help from their friends, possibly from their family, possibly from people who are not blood relations, but they feel are as close as family. And I think there's a lot more diversity, especially among younger people, in terms of who they feel comfortable seeking help from in times of grieving. I think often it is the friends.
So do you think, to what extent is therapy acceptable? Because in Morocco, for example, if you go to a therapist or psychologist or psychiatrist, you're crazy. No one is going to be your friend. How is that viewed in America?
Oh, it varies a lot. I think we've now reached a cultural tipping point where it's culturally and socially acceptable in the mainstream, and the stigma is mainly reserved to subcultures and smaller communities where therapy has not become widely accepted or talked about. But it's really messy. It depends on who you're talking to, and it depends on what region you're in and what religious community and what just what community you're in generally. But I think in the mainstream, therapy is pretty well accepted now as a means of processing emotion.
And why do you think that? Is it because of ethical or because of trust, that people would trust not a stranger, but someone who could be more of trustworthy with their the reasons or the causes that are affecting them emotionally? Or is it just a culturally accepted phenomenon?
Well, I think the need for therapy arises from the fact that historically Americans have not been well taught in terms of healthy ways to process emotion, and might have relationships that are very strong in other ways, but don't tend to have emotionally open, healthy relationships with family and close friends. And even if that is not completely true at the present moment, it's true enough for enough people who don't trust their families or their close friends to be able to be vulnerable with them. They feel that they need another outlet, and that's created a huge market space for therapists to enter and to serve that need. And I think there's a lot of diversity in how effective that is. I think some therapists can be very good if they are working with the right client and that relationship is founded on trust. And it can be very helpful for a lot of people to have a person that they can just dump their emotions onto, and they don't feel that they need to do anything in return. It can be a way of exercising selfishness in a culture where both selfishness and selflessness are very structured, and there's a lot of weight and baggage attached to both acts. And so we have to feel that we're in a safe place if we're going to act either selfishly or selflessly. We have to know that it's culturally and socially appropriate, and the therapy setting creates a set of conditions where it's appropriate and acceptable and even called upon to be vulnerable and in that regard to be selfish and take up that emotional space and be served by the other person because you are paying them, you're giving them something in return. And so it renders simple a process that would otherwise be very complex and difficult to navigate.
Well, you mentioned paying them, and that was actually my next question. How is that for people who are not able to access that service? And now it has become basically a cultural phenomena that people just go to therapists. How about those who cannot access that service and they cannot be open because of the fact that expressing negative emotions is not culturally acceptable. As you said before, people would be feeling shame and embarrassed and all of that to express their emotions, specifically the negative emotions.
It gets pretty messy. I think there is a correlation, and I haven't looked at data on this, so I don't know how strong this correlation is. But I do think there's a correlation between someone being like working class at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum and not feeling that they can be vulnerable emotionally, because they're already so vulnerable in so many other ways, economically and with power and politics, and like they're already kind of stuck. And so to be vulnerable emotionally can be even harder. And so repression, I think, is a lot of people resort just to repressing their own emotions. And but again, that's a really broad statement. I don't think that's true of everybody. I think many people have trusted friends or sometimes family they can go to. And then there also are more options available now in terms of what sort of therapy you can get, whether you can get it through health insurance, whether you can have a pay-as-you-go plan. Some therapists offer their services for free, often at universities, for instance. The therapy sessions will be subsidized by the university student fees, so the students can see a therapist for a relatively low rate. There are a lot of different options available, and I don't know if there's one single trend governing it all, because it's going in so many different directions.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Asya? How is therapy practiced in Turkey in comparison to America? And as I said before, in Morocco, it's a taboo. Like, you, even if you go to a therapist or a psychologist or psychiatrist, you can't say it because everyone would disown you and you would lose your friends and family. How is that in Turkey?
Yeah, it's so familiar though. So it's changing, I would say. But it used to be more like it's like a shame if you go there. Are you crazy or you have a really big health problem then, mental health problem? But now I think with the young generation, it has been changing. I think they are more open to talk about their mental health. And people started to accept that mental health is a very, very normal, like a health issue. Like other health issues. So that's why it's getting more common. It's more accepted in the society right now. But still, like in Turkey, like I said, people are very close to each other. So usually friends give advice to other friends. And so if you have any situation, if you have any issues, then you can get advice and then move on with that advice. So it's not a professional advice, but still, like, you move on with that. It's getting better, I would say, but not. I don't think it's not like the United States, not like America.
Mm-hmm. And Makaya, can you talk a little bit about in America, like when someone outside asks someone, they would say, like, how are you? They'll be like, I'm great, or I am doing well, or something like that, just very positive response. Can you talk a little bit about why is that, and what would be the difference, different reaction from a person if they hear the response that is not a usual normal response that people give every day?
Right. I'm actually not sure how much to read into that, because I think it's easy to connect that to a history of emotional repression, definitely, because it is unacceptable. If somebody asks how your day is going, they're a stranger, maybe in a coffee shop, usually you say fine or good or I'm good or something light. And I'm actually not sure, though, that in and of itself is a sign of cultural emotional repression and pathology, because it is a situation among strangers where there's not already a level of trust baked in. And so it's more of a social nicety to make it easier to interact with that stranger in the moment. So you could read it as an expression of cultural repression of emotions. You could also read it just as a mechanism that our culture uses to grease the wheels of social interaction. And there are corollaries in other cultures I can think of. In India, when I studied in India in 2013, I was really confused for the first couple of months, because strangers would ask me, have you eaten lunch yet? And I thought they were inviting me to lunch, and they weren't. They were just asking if I'd eaten lunch yet, and then I realized it was their version of how are you doing. And if you say yes, you're presumed to be doing well, which immediately made sense to me once I figured it out, because you're usually better after lunch. But we don't have that particular version of it here, and it is, people often don't know how to respond when someone expresses negative emotion in that context. On the other hand, though, we've all been through the COVID-19 pandemic and all of the attendant crises now, and I think it may be becoming more accessible or acceptable to express negative emotion. It still would be somewhat superficial. I think there's now a space, though, for strangers in a coffee shop to ask, how are you doing? And the response is, well, my day sucks and my life kind of sucks, too. And I think that might be a more acceptable response now, but it wouldn't go any deeper than it did before.
And can you also talk a little bit about the media, if the media actually has something to do with changing cultural behaviors that, of course, affect their emotional side of people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our entire media economy is built on attention, and attention is attracted by emotion. And that's not a new thing. I do think that when I reference cultural scripts, I think since television became such a prominent part of our lives in I want to say, around the 50s, ever since then, television shows and film, I think to a lesser degree, have created emotional scripts. And the more formulaic the television programming, the more it adheres to that script, and the more people on the street feel that they have to reinforce and play by that set of emotional rules that has been articulated on screen. And in the last 20 years or so, I think it's gotten much messier because I think we have more scripts floating around. I think television has gotten largely better and more complex, which means there's a wider range of emotional responses being represented. And at the same time, you've got the internet, which is its own ecosystem, and there are millions of sub-ecosystems there with different scripts. But one thing I think has happened now is partly as a product of the way our media works is outrage is now an acceptable public emotion alongside all the positive emotions. But still, if you express a positive emotion in the wrong context or outrage in the wrong context, you will be at best... you'll garner confusion. At worst, you might be punished by your peers and lose social capital because of it. And it really depends on what context you're in, because there's a diversity of scripts available now, but still you have to be fluent in the emotional vocabulary of your context in order to retain your social capital.
And what kind of examples that you may display, like to leaving you losing your friends or your close one, can you give us an example on that, if you have one?
Well, I think among close friends, those scripts have less currency. So can I give you an example in the workplace?
Yes.
Well, I worked at a grocery store for a while before the pandemic, and it was considered a sign of dissent to express negative emotion, even if a negative emotion was a valid response to a dysfunctional system that we were having to work with. And even if it was presented as constructive criticism for how that system might work better, and I remember in particular in one meeting, there we would often get boxes that were products that we didn't have on the shelves, and so people had started labeling them and writing "no home" on them because they didn't have a home on the shelf. And the boss of the grocery department reprimanded us for doing that because she was afraid it was spreading negative affect. That wasn't how I saw it. I was pretty sure it was a running joke. And during the same meeting, she felt perfectly comfortable referring to herself as our superior and us as her inferiors. And so it was complex, but it seems that in that case, the emotional script, it mandated positivity, and the purpose of the script was to maintain power relations as they were and not to allow for anyone but the boss of the department or one of her bosses to make changes in that system, no matter how functional or dysfunctional it was. But that all of that political struggle was getting expressed through emotions, in which emotions were deemed acceptable and unacceptable, and emotional affect was getting assigned to the behavior, writing on the boxes, which wasn't, I don't think it was even an expression of emotion. I think it was a joke. but it was read as an expression of emotion that was subversive to the prevailing script.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Asya? Like, for example, in Morocco, the media actually reinforces the emotional expressions for people, like the movies or shows, or we did, like, even have movies where, like, people would be beating themselves or something when someone dies. So how is the media portraying emotional in Turkey?
Yeah, I think it has the media has a really huge impact on the expressions of emotions in the society, because we grow up watching TV dramas, and in Turkey on the TV there are a lot of Turkish dramas, and then so you know how to cry, how to get angry by watching those shows, and then that's why, like, people in the society, they get angry easily, they get sad easily, or love strongly, or hate strongly. It's just, I think, yeah, the media has a lot of impact on that.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about therapy and how, if is it a taboo or is it acceptable in Turkey through the media? Like, do the media it reinforce or does not even say anything about?
Not even mentioned in the media. So I haven't seen any advertisements or anything. I mean, there are some, like, health shows, like a morning doctor shows sometimes, and then so they start talking about there are, like, doctors are guests in the show, and then they talk about it, but it's just very recent, I would say. And then you know, and also, like, the therapy in Turkey, it's expensive. Of course, there is a government mediated health system, but then the especially, like, a psychotherapist type of therapists are long-term therapy, right? So that's why, like, insurance usually doesn't cover especially high quality psychotherapists. So it's not really, like, on the media, and then it's not promoted by the media to the society that they can get seek help from the psychotherapist.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Again, this is Ido Itini. We just had Mekaya and Asya with us today talking about how people express emotions across different cultures. So thank you so much for tuning in. Next week, I will be back with a new topic in Radio Magazine on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed our program, and we look forward to having you again. Thank you guys for joining our show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Tao.
Thank you.